Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you. Hey, Phil, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Yeah, you know, as far as Marquette basketball is concerned, 2014 just finished with a flaming turd, shall we call it, and 2015 started a little bit better. We're going to talk about those two games here on the show today, then we'll look ahead to Marquette's next games as we are now two games deep into Marquette's 18-game slate in the Big East. And Phil, I guess we'll start with the negative and maybe work our way up from there. Boy, that DePaul game was everything we were afraid it would be.
That was the debacle and a half, and it was exactly, you know, we jokingly referred to the Allstate Arena as the House of Horrors, but it continues to be a House of Horrors. I don't know what it is about DePaul and playing at the Allstate Arena that Marquette just seems to have a mental block that they can't get past.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how good Marquette is or how bad DePaul is. It seems like Marquette routinely saves it one of its worst performances of the year every year for the trip to Chicago.
Yeah, it was atrocious.
Yeah, you know, and I think some of the concerns that we had going into Big East play were really relevant in that one. You know, we talked about Luke Fisher and his foul trouble. I think that prevented him from being much of a factor. He's kind of struggled with double teams, and he spent a lot of time on the bench. And boy, the shooting was just the big thing in that one, and especially from Matt Carlino, who you would hope would have that is just an anomaly in his season, and he never has a game that poorly again. But he was 1 of 10 from the field, from 3 of 14 from the field. And boy, I was just during that game, I was just saying, at one point we got to stop having Carlino out there if he's this lost. And hopefully he's not that bad again. But he was pretty rough that day.
Well, the whole thing about the game was, you know, it's easy to forget at one point that Marquette, with, you know, about 10 or 11 minutes left, was up 12. But even up 12, they didn't look good doing it. The team never looked really cohesive. Some of that is just kind of the nature of DePaul. As I was talking to a couple of fans at Saturday's game, somebody said, well, you know, they're just kind of a scrapyard, you know, kind of a schoolyard kind of team, DePaul. And so it's kind of a disjointed sort of game. There's no real flow. It's kind of just kind of schoolyard tossing the ball around. So it feels like a weird game all the time. But, you know, Marquette just didn't look good the entire game, even when they were hitting shots earlier. And they gave up a couple, you know, they tried to give up big leads a couple of times. I mean, they were up 12, I think, 2 or 3 different times and let DePaul back in every time.
But hey, I guess it's no shame losing on the road to the team that's in first place in the conference, right?
No, God.
Yeah, as we record this podcast, DePaul is your first place team. But I guess the big thing that was a big disappointment for me in that game was we learned before the game that DePaul's starting big man, Tommy Hamilton, was out for the game, was suspended.
And presumably their best player.
Right, you would think. And if not their best player, certainly the toughest matchup for Fisher. And I think everyone is kind of saying on Twitter, well, now, you know, Fisher go to work, and he should have a huge game. And that's exactly what I expected once I found the news out. But hopefully it's just a learning experience. A learning experience for everyone on the team, really. And, you know, it was speaking of learning experiences, it was a little, I guess, refreshing, maybe be the word, to hear from Wojo after the Providence game to just say, yeah, that was a mistake on my part. I should have played Sandy Cohen more, because Sandy Cohen didn't play at all in that game and then had a much better game against Providence.
Yeah. Well, and you know, as he mentioned in his post-game remarks against Providence, the team, part of the reason that Marquette struggled in the last 10 minutes of the game is they were tired. And I think the DePaul game overall was, you know, was, I mean, the players contributed, but I also think there were some glaring issues that Wojo had. I think the not playing Cohen at all, if nothing else, to give some players some rest, I think was an omission on his part. And it's great that I wish our coaches didn't have to admit mistakes, but it was great that he did. I think the other thing is he put, and we'll talk about this maybe in more depth, but Dwayne Wilson struggled in the game as well and had a mistake at about the 440 mark towards the end of the game, and Wojo yanked him out for a teaching moment. Okay, great, on board with that. But then he didn't reinsert him into the game until 2 minutes left or 1.5 minutes left. And I think he was he was too long off the court, and I think that was another mistake that Wojo made by not putting our most athletic, best defending players on the court in crunch time.
The way the programs are right now, Marquette just should not lose to DePaul. You know, we got maybe just a little too excited to get Slate to, as we kind of talked about in the previous podcast, to even get in the mix for the tournament. And so that kind of crushed that dream, like, immediately, right out of the bat. Like, all right, let's not talk about the tournament again until this team goes on some kind of unprecedented hot streak. You know, to get all cliche on us, I think it's just best to talk about the Big East slate one game at a time, and just we'll just see how many skins Marquette has on the wall when it's all said and done. But, you know, that game was, I guess, disappointing just because it was just a reality check that, you know, it's not all going to be great for Marquette going through Big East play, that they're going to have some very frustrating games. And DePaul was certainly that.
Right. Well, and like we, not to, to toot our own horn, but we've been saying that with this team, they're going to lose some games they shouldn't, and potentially will win some games they shouldn't either. And DePaul was the classic example. It, you know, even looking at the stat line and how DePaul performed and what they had available, you know, DePaul wasn't exactly in a position where they should have won that game either. Mm-hmm. So it took a pretty abysmal performance from Marquette to get them where that is. Is that reflective of their talent and their capability? I don't think so. But, you know, that's the nature of the beast. That's what the Big East is going to be. You have to bring your A game every single time. And hopefully they'll learn from that. And, you know, this is also why we don't pod angry, you know, given what happened in the DePaul game. That could have been a pretty depressing podcast. But then, whether we're ready to transition or not, I think some of the lessons were learned from the DePaul game that helped in Providence.
Yeah, because, you know, it hasn't been all bad since our last podcast. I mean, the Providence win was a nice one. I mean, Providence had a pretty good non-conference slate. They came into that game at 11-3 on the year, and then Marquette had what was really kind of a nice win. There were still some struggles, from Fisher, I would say, because, you know, he did struggle with double teams. He had his shot blocked a lot. How many block shots did Providence had 10 blocks in that game. Now, it wasn't all on Fisher, but he got his shot blocked more than I would think a 6'11 guy would. But, you know, DeRozier's is a big kid, and he was a big problem. He was a big matchup problem, I guess, for Fisher. And Fisher probably won't see a guy that big every night, but he is going to start seeing more big men than he has in his previous four or five games.
Well, and I think I talked about it the last podcast, is, and DeRozier's, I wasn't necessarily thinking of DeRozier's, but DeRozier's is the example of when I said, you know, what would Luke Fisher do up against an athletic big man? That's kind of what DeRozier's is, you know. So, you know, one of Luke Fisher's strengths is he's a strong athlete as a tall player. He's not going to overpower you, so he can kind of out-athlete you. Mm-hmm. Which is not a word, but we'll pretend it is.
Well, athlete is, just athlete is not.
Right. right. But DeRozier's, you know, could kind of match up with him in that regard. So I think it was tough for Luke. Plus, you know, Providence did a really good job of trying to prevent some of the post feeds. At one point, Juan was trying to post up roughly 2 feet from the perimeter, from the arc, because he got pushed all the way out there. So they did a good job of defending the post. I think they went in with the game plan Providence did of saying, hey, you know, Luke Fisher, we think your offense runs around him right now. We're going to take him away and force you to attack from the perimeter, which, you know, they were able to do. And luckily they started to hit some shots, and Sandy Cohen had a kind of hero moment there in the first half and went on a good 6-7 minute tear.
Yeah, I think he had 12 points in the game. I think 10 of those might have been in the first half. But, you know, he had a couple threes, and then had a couple nice drives to the basket. And it was good to see him not only get some playing time, but get in there and really produce. And because Marquette's going to need everyone to do something, especially because, you know, when the guards aren't shooting the ball well, we talked earlier, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the struggles in the backcourt. They're going to need a guy like Sandy Cohen to come off the bench and hit some shots, and so Wojo doesn't feel obligated to maybe stick with, you know, if Matt Carlino or Dwayne Wilson are really struggling, he's not going to feel obligated to stick with them because there's no one else on the bench he trusts. You know, if Cohen can have more performances like that, where he can go in and give Wojo a few good minutes, then he can breathe a little easier if he has to sit down Carlino or Dwayne Wilson or Derek Wilson for an extended stretch.
Right. Well, and there was an article by the beat writer from the Journal Sentinel, Matt
Velasquez.
Like what Joe said. In which he kind of right immediately following the DePaul game talked to Sandy Cohen and talked about, and Matt's been doing an outstanding job, and the article was very timely. And Sandy kind of talked about, the physicality and the speed of the game at the Big East level is just different than he's used to. So it's taking some time to get used to it. And I think as he gets minutes, I mean, he only played 12 minutes against Providence. You could argue maybe he should have had a few more minutes given his performance.
He did have foul trouble in the first half. He sat down. He sat down like midway through the first half with two fouls. So otherwise, I think he would have played a few more minutes in the first half. But, your point is taken.
Right. And so I think he'll get more minutes as he proves himself out. And I also think, the couple of things that happened in this game show that Wojo, unlike potentially some other coaches we may or may not have had, learns and adapts and changes as the situation dictates. He left Sandy in for an extended period of time when he got hot. He played for at least 5 minutes straight when he got hot. He said, "All right, get out there." And in fact, some of the best defense I think the team played was when Sandy was on the court when Wojo decided to go to a 1-3-1, which really kind of just started the run in the second half because Providence looked like they had never seen one before. And it was a really interesting lineup. Sandy was in there part of the time, but it was Juan and Fisher and Derek running the baseline, and then Juwan Johnson and Dwayne Wilson if Sandy wasn't in. Kind of disruptive. And it was just another example of Wojciechowski changing and adjusting based on what he had in front of him and what his players were producing.
Yeah, I don't know how many games this team is going to win over the course of the season, but I think one thing we have seen early here in Wojo's coaching career is he's pretty good with adjustments, whether it's in-game or between games, and finding what is working and what is not working and is not afraid to break from his routine or what he's been comfortable with and find something else that works, whether it was, getting rid of man-to-man defense and going to a zone early in the season or, as you just alluded to there, going with the hot hand if someone unexpectedly is shooting the ball well. And that's something that is encouraging to me as we kind of go through this Big East slate to make me think that, if, Marquette goes on, gets in a funk and loses, say, three or four games in a row, that the team's not going to quit and just keep running the same thing out there. That I'm comfortable and confident that Wojo will make adjustments to right the ship if things, get bad, at one point in Big East play.
Right. Right. Well, and it was another game where they were able to make an adjustment given Luke Fisher was again in foul trouble. Now, one could argue the couple of fouls he got in the second half were extremely ticky-tacky, which really impacted things. But you would have thought, I think Fisher went out with his fourth foul at the 11-minute mark, and that was kind of the moment where everyone, I think at least in the Bradley Center, was kind of going, "Oh, this is DePaul all over again. We've got a nice lead, and we're gonna start to let Providence crawl back in." And they threatened. Apparently we lost sight of Henton a couple of times because he went nuts.
Yeah, 28 points for him, 6 threes.
Yeah, it was just anytime he touched the ball, you just thought it was going in the hoop. Mm-hmm. But they kind of weathered through it, and maybe these early games where we get into Big East play and have to struggle without Luke Fisher at times, it'll pay dividends down the road as they learn to be able to adapt with, Luke becomes kind of a crutch for them, if you will, because he's been such a nice piece. So maybe they're learning that, you're not going to have him all the time.
Yeah. Speaking of Luke Fisher, I'm still not sure if it's a little thing or a big thing, but he did get his first start of the season in the Providence game. I was glad to see it because, I don't know if it was because of, Wojo wants him to earn the starting spot or if there was a concern with his foul trouble and that's why he wasn't starting. But, if the foul trouble was a factor there, I've always kind of been of the opinion, throw him out there and maybe he doesn't foul, for the first few minutes, and then you could try to get every minute you possibly can out of him. And even though he did have some foul trouble in that game, he still played 30 minutes, which is still a pretty good amount for a big man.
Right, yeah, that's about the amount I would want him to play. Yeah. So it worked out pretty good. He was able to play relatively well without fouling when he was in trouble. So I don't know. It'll be curious to see. I would assume he's going to start against Georgetown. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. Mm-hmm. But who knows? Maybe he's got some plan to, you know, to defend Josh Smith without someone taller than 6'7". I don't know.
Yeah, Josh Smith is low. We'll get to Georgetown in just a minute. But another thing I want to talk about after, you know, these first couple games, and, you know, Paint Touches posted an article about Dwayne Wilson about statistically kind of breaking down his shooting and how he's been off lately. But, you know, I just wanted to talk about the guards and shooting in general, because that has been a concern. Because I think, you know, if teams that are scouting Marquette now are now looking, of course, at games with Fisher in it. And, you know, I think the kind of book is, look, let's just double-team Fisher, take him away, and make these guards beat us shooting it. And if, you know, Marquette's not going to have guys making shots at the guard spot, you know, wins are going to be really tough to come by in the Big East.
Right.
So, yeah, well, I was just...
And shooting continues to be a, pardon the pun, but a hit-or-miss scenario for Marquette. I mean, you've got nominally four players on the team who should be shooting three-point shots. Dwayne Wilson, Juan Anderson, Matt Carlino, and Juwan Johnson. And all four of those guys have been struggling. I mean, you know, Dwayne Wilson, Paint Touches correctly pointed out, has really been struggling. And he went 2-for-9 against Providence. But Juwan Johnson also went 3-for-13. Carlino went 3-for-11. Now Juan Anderson had a great game and went 6-for-8 with 18 points, but you know that's going to be tough to win when you're getting those kind of shooting performances from nominally your best player, your best shooter.
Yeah, and I think that's one area where Cohen can help a little more, because you mentioned those four guys. You know, I would throw Cohen in as a guy I am comfortable shooting the three, because he's actually been pretty good in limited time, granted, but he actually has shown an ability to make outside shots. So I would expect to see more of him, you know, in those three guard sets, you know, out there playing the three when one of those guys you mentioned is struggling shooting the ball. And hopefully Marquette doesn't have more games where all three of them are struggling, because if so, like I said, the wins are going to be really tough to come by in the Big East, because I think teams are starting to show plan A against Marquette is let's just double-team Fisher and make him give up the ball, which he has been okay with at times, but other times, especially when he's double-teamed like pretty far away from the basket, like when he gets the ball, you know, 10 or more feet away from the basket, you know, he kind of really struggles to, you know, find someone else, and he really, you know, he's not going to get any closer. So, I mean, they got to, I guess, from Marquette's perspective, they got to find a way to get Luke the ball much closer to the basket. And then, you know, his post game comes into play, and he's been able to go up and hopefully can kind of get some of those easy buckets.
Yeah, the feeding the post has been difficult. And you know, I guess from your perspective, you know, Dwayne Wilson was kind of the early in the season, everyone was kind of thinking, all right, this was the Dwayne Wilson we thought we were going to get as a freshman. You know, he's really coming in. He's going to light it on fire. I think he went for 30 points against Georgia Tech. You know, and obviously Paint Touch has talked about this a little bit as well. But, you know, he's kind of really fallen off in the last, I'd probably say 7 or 8 games and struggled. And Juwan Johnson has, well, maybe not that much more productive, has kind of taken his minutes, and it seems like Dwayne is struggling and perhaps a little frustrated. Do you think this is a slump? Do you think this is a, you know, this is a freshman, you know, kind of hump in the road? Do you think this is sustained? What's your?
I'm honestly not that worried about Dwayne Wilson long term. Yeah, short term I am a little concerned that he is in a funk. He's definitely in a funk, and I hope he's not hitting a wall that he's, you know, not going to recover from. But I still think his best games are ahead of him this season. I still think he's going to be an impact player, and I think he's going to have to get back to just getting the buckets in the paint, and then maybe extend his game from there. You know, when he can attack the basket and just get a few easy layups just to get his confidence going, then I think you can see him extend his game and maybe hit a few more outside shots. That's another thing where I'm confident in Wojo. I don't think Wojo is going to let him quit and let him hit a wall and become a non-factor on this team. I think, and you know, the other coaches too, whoever he, you know, he works with in practice to kind of get his game right, they're going to get the most out of him this year. So I would not give up on Dwayne Wilson for this year. Yeah, it's concerning for right now, but I think Dwayne Wilson's going to have some big games at some point in Big East play. Hopefully one of them will be on Tuesday.
Right. That would be great. Yeah, I think he's just – I think, you know, there may be some physical aspects to especially his shot that are kind of a result of kind of the mental – he's either overthinking it or just kind of mentally blocked, because it kind of, to me, it looks like he's pushing his shot a little bit more than just kind of releasing the ball. But, you know, I think he can work through it, but that's going to be the question. Can he work through it? Because, you know, Juwan Johnson has been good, and he has major kudos. He got 10 rebounds against Providence, which was, you know, obviously was just huge. Yeah. We actually out-rebounded a team for once this season. So major contribution from Trey J. But, you know, again, his offense is still a work in progress. There's still a lot of driving into the lane without any real idea what he's going to do with it when he gets within 5 feet of the
lane. Yeah, I think you see that from Dwayne at times when he's at his worst, when he's struggling. Yes. He does that as well. And I think that's something that can be eliminated with just a little more discipline, I guess. You know, you would think, like – you know, shooting from the outside, like, that could take a while. But I just think going to the rack with no plan, I think that can be eliminated. Just, you know, the coach just say, guys, just stop doing it. You know, guys, stop going to the rack. You know, you got four other guys out there. And, you know, look for the big man when you're getting in the trouble, you know, getting in trouble there going to the rack. So, like I said, I think it's fixable. Overall, though, I think, you know, we've been in kind of a lot of – pointing out a lot of the negative, but overall, you know, I have to be pleased with the Providence win, because, you know, get some of the confidence back. Mainly, you know, the big thing, of course, is Juan Anderson. You know, I was thinking, you know, in his senior year, has Juan really had a bad game? You know, maybe he's had some games when he's been quiet and hasn't scored a lot, but I don't remember Juan having many bad games in his senior year here. He's been consistently just a very solid player. Maybe never a star, maybe never a guy who, you know, the other team is going to game plan for, but he has had just a lot of games where he's just played really well, just been I hate to use the cliche term, but it fits with him, just a glue guy. He's just a guy I've just been so happy to have out there every game.
Well, and it's kind of he's the ultimate quietest or silent assassin, so to speak. I mean, you know, and that's probably a poor phrase to use, but I mean, he does all the little things, and he's not flashy. He's just really, really solid. And his game, he's actually the one I'm most excited for in terms of from a personal, like, I want to see him having great success and doing good things, because I've always liked Juan's game, and it's always seemed to, the previous 3 years, he seemed to struggle. But I don't think he's had a bad game. He's had super quiet games where he's, you know, done workmanlike 9 points, six
rebounds,
two steals.
I'm looking at his game by game now, and I guess statistically, you know, his worst game was probably the Wisconsin game, where he was 1 of 7 from the field and had 3 points, but he did have 10 boards in that game. So,
right.
You know, he's always, like you said, he's always contributing something, and he's playing a lot of minutes right now. He's playing, gosh, probably over 20 minutes a game. Over 25 minutes a game, I would say. He's in the 30s.
He's probably averaging like 30, 32.
Yeah, he's playing a lot, and he's playing well. So I think Juan Anderson is – I'm happy for him in that he's finally having, you know, a really solid season. He's probably not going to be, you know, an all-Big East player or anything like that, but I think he's just having a senior season that he's going to be proud of, and I think his coaches are going to be proud of when it's all said and done, because he's been just a guy that's – you can just steadily depend on every night. And I think he's going to keep Marquette in a lot of games. And I think you're going to get a similar effort from him every night. And it's going to be a matter of, you know, the guys around him, if, you know, they're hot or cold, you know, they're going to determine whether or not Marquette's winning games. You know, it's going to be if Fisher is on or if the guards are on. I think you're going to get a similar steady effort from Juan Anderson every night. So I've been very pleased with Juan Anderson's play this year.
Well, I think we just need to start calling him Mr. Dependable, because he's kind of turned into the one player you have to have out on the court. I mean, you'd like to have Luke Fisher, obviously, and you want, you know, Dwayne or Juwan or Matt if they're hitting out there, but Juan Anderson is the one player on the team that is somewhat indispensable, because he does all the little things you need you need done. And he's showing, I think, some tremendous leadership. One of the things that, got over, I meant to mention earlier in the Providence game, I think there was a moment where Juwan almost came up with a steal and dribbled it off his foot in the second half or something and went out of bounds. And you just kind of, he had a frustrated look on his face. And Juwan was the first one over there, you know, picking his head up, talking to him, you know, telling him to shake it off and let's get the next one. And you know, I think Juwan has been, along with Derek, has been the real leadership on the court for the team.
Yeah, Juan's very vocal in those huddles. You know, like, you know, when the team's going to, you know, in a timeout or whatever, he's the guy who's, you know, maybe barking at some of the younger guys to fire them up, or, you know, if they've made a bad play, just tell them to get their head in the game before, you know, Wojo and the coaching staff has their piece. But, as far as on the court leadership, Juan's been great. And you mentioned Derek, too. You know, we've talked about Derek in some of the previous podcasts. Derek's also been very steady. You know, turnovers are down, assists are up, and he's scoring at a nice steady rate. So the senior leadership, I'd say, has been pretty good from those two guys.
Yeah. And the other thing, and we mentioned a little last podcast, and it feels weird because I'm one of the ones that was very anti Derek do more than just dribble the ball up the court. But he was 3-for-4 in the Providence game. I think he was 3-for-5 in the DePaul game. We may be to the point where we want Derek to do a little bit more, where we may actually want him to try and score a little bit more, because he seems to be, you know, if he's confident and assertive, it's there for him. But it's kind of when he goes a little passive that he's not, you know, it's almost like he reluctantly takes a shot, that's when it's not going to go well for him. If he's assertive and within the flow of the offense, I think he can do some things, and we may need to
He's really at his best when he slashes to the basket, with, you know, whether it's with the ball or without the ball. You know, just making a cut to the basket, and he's, you know, get some nice easy layups, and, you know, he's strong enough that he can absorb contact and kind of get around it and still get the ball up there. So, and Derek actually plays pretty big for a guy who's 6'1". He rebounds the ball pretty well. If Derek, you know, does a little more on offense, I'm fine with that, because he's been really kind of settled into his role, and he's actually been a pleasant surprise in his senior season after he caught a lot of flack last year. Some deserve, some maybe not, but I think he's had a great senior season so far.
Right, absolutely.
All right, well, let's go ahead to the next game. Let's talk about Marquette. Only has one game this week. They're actually going to be off on Saturday, so maybe some time to gather and fix some things before a tough stretch coming up after that, if need be. But the game on Tuesday, January 6th, is a big one, big opportunity for Marquette as they go on the road, have a chance to get what would be easily their best win of the season if they can go to Washington, D.C. and beat the Georgetown Hoyas. Georgetown, like Marquette, is 1-1 in Big East play. They lost their opener in a little bit of a disappointing fashion for the Hoyas. They lost their first game at Xavier, and then they came home and beat Creighton pretty handily, 76-61. I think the guys you look for are pretty obvious when you talk about Georgetown, Phil. At the guard spot, Smith Rivera is as tough a matchup as really anyone in the conference. Just a very athletic player, talented player, can really score, can really light it up. And then, of course, you know, we've talked about him a few times, the big man in the middle, Josh Smith, who is let's see, what is he listed at? Probably,
400
dump truck, I believe he's listed at. He's listed at 6'10", 350, and that I believe every bit of that. So, what are you looking for in the matchup with Georgetown?
Well, with the Georgetown matchup, what's going to be interesting is Georgetown is with Josh Smith, is at least from the games I've seen, seems to be a little less, quote unquote, traditional Georgetown. They seem to do less of the swing offense and less of the backdoor cuts than they normally do. They seem to go to almost a more traditional set when Josh Smith is in there. But their guards are fast and athletic. That's the thing that's going to be most interesting. Because I think Josh Smith, he's a beast, and he's a true center and can do some things on the offensive end, but the question is, what's he going to be able to do on the defensive end? And he has a propensity to foul a lot. Mm-hmm. So can you attack Josh Smith, get him out of the game, and then try and hope you can limit the speed of of the Georgetown players, because that's going to be the weakness. Is are they going to be able to get into the seams on a 2-3, and can you play 2-3 with Josh Smith in there? I don't know.
Yeah, well, what I'll look for is if Marquette can get some turnovers, or just, you know, to get their transition offense and get some easy back, because Luke Fisher will beat Josh Smith down the floor every single time.
Yes.
And so if you can get him down there first and get him a quick, easy basket, you know, it could be a big game for Fisher. But then if, you know, if the transition game isn't as good, you know, I you know, when Luke is pushed away from the basket, he has struggled. So that could be troublesome. So we'll have to see. I'm definitely going to be interested to see how much Josh Smith plays and, you know, how well he is positioned to defend Luke Fisher, and how involved Fisher can be. And then, you know, of course, the guard matchup, you know, Devontae Smith-Rivera is going to be tough, but with Derek Wilson on him, hopefully his impact can be limited. You're not going to shut him down, but I think with Derek Wilson on him, hopefully you're going to force some of these other guys to beat you. Former Marquette commit Aaron Bowen is still in college. You know, he's averaging about 8 points
a game.
Yeah, I guess it seems like he's been around for a while. But, yeah, Aaron Bowen is a senior for the Hoyas, so he's still there. And I'd say one guy to watch out for, a guy who can have an impact as a freshman, is this Paul White kid. 6'8", he's kind of like almost center height. I mean, he's like 6'8", 6'9", but he can really handle it. Really tough matchup at the guard spot. So, I mean, if like Carlino or Dwayne Wilson, or, you know, they're matched up with him, I mean, he's got like a 5-inch advantage on them. So he's actually hit some big shots for them in a few games. So that's a guy kind of like an X factor coming off the Hoyas bench that I think could really hurt Marquette.
Well, yeah, and it's gonna be interesting. You know, Marquette is probably a better defensive team than Georgetown is, but Georgetown's probably a better offensive team than Marquette is. So it's going to be a real kind of match of strength on strength and weakness on weakness. So it'll be interesting to see how it all kind of shakes out. And the question is going to be, is Georgetown hitting their shots? Mm-hmm. You know, because Josh Smith is going to get his. Smith Rivera is going to get his. You know, so it's really a matter of what are the rest of the players doing around him, and can Marquette limit their chances? Plus, it's going to be a road game, and, you know, what, the Big East is 9-1 at home. You know, with St. John's being the only one to decide that the home court was not something worth protecting. So
never change, you know, St. John's.
Yeah, never. That you be you. So I you know, that's going to be the tough thing is going on the road, and kind of just pulling out something in Georgetown where, you know, they're kind of, you know, they're picked as a preseason number two in the Big East. So this is going to be a big challenge for Marquette.
Yeah, you know, when you look at the Big East as a whole, and we're only two games in, so it's really tough to kind of determine where everyone's going to fall. But, you know, a lot of people very high, you know, even outside of the conference, out high on the Big East, and their, you know, potential of getting multiple teams in. So I'm kind of excited to see how this all plays out. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, who knows how many, you know, upsets or how many teams will be sitting in the middle of the pack. But, you know, I got to think right now, you know, anything less than four bids for this league would be a disappointment for me, considering the way they played in non-conference play. Because I think they're just, you know, you look at Villanova for sure, and then you would hope Seton Hall is off to a really good start, and then I think teams like Georgetown, St. John's, and Butler are all teams that will probably be in the mix for the tournament.
Right. Well, what's interesting is, I mean, there's even been some pundits talking about six teams, which out of a 10-team conference seems pretty
ridiculous.
Ridiculous, kind of insane. I wouldn't imagine more than five. Mm-hmm. But it what's going to be interesting is it's a good thing the conference was well regarded going in, because it's clearly going to be a case of teams being difficult to beat. You know, there's going to be night in. You know, DePaul is conference co-champion as of, you know, right now, two games in. You know, so any team seems to be able to win at any given time. So that's going to be interesting to see and I think you tweeted about it, you know, is every team going to end up 9-9, and what is that?
What do you do in a 10-team tie situation? How do you work the bracket out there?
Right, exactly. So, but I mean, I think the majority of the teams are going to be, I think you're going to see probably, you know, four of the teams being 9-9 or 10-8, and then all the rest of the teams being within one or two games of that in either direction. It's going to be kind of a packed conference, and you're going to see. I wonder if they're going to hurt themselves beating up on each other. That's going to eliminate some teams that might otherwise have gotten into the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely plan on seeing one or two teams, you know, just really kind of set. I mean, I definitely still, despite their early loss, I still expect Villanova to really distance themselves from the Big East and maybe win the conference by two games or so. But you know, Seton Hall may be really, really good, especially if they get Whitehead back. I think that's a team that's going to be ranked, and by the time we get down to bubble talk, I think they'll be feeling pretty confident about their chances. We'll see, you know, how Georgetown and St. John's shake out as the season goes along. But, yeah, you know, it would almost be a bummer if, you know, we had, say, Villanova at the top with 13, 14 wins, and then we just had a bunch of teams, you know, between 10 and 8 wins, and a few of them get left out, and the league only got, like, three teams in. But, you know, that's, like, way down the road. But I am intrigued to see, you know, after Villanova, what that second tier is going to look like in the Big East. Because I think there are going to be some really good teams, teams that are going to be tough for Marquette to beat. And I'm curious to see exactly how far behind those teams Marquette is going to be as we get 6-7 games into this conference slate. And, you know, some of those teams at the top, and maybe Georgetown is one of them, I think Marquette's going to have a really tough time going on the road and beating those teams. But, you know, when those teams come to Milwaukee, if Marquette's going to be a very frustrating team for them, and it's going to maybe be a team that some of the rest of the Big East starts to hate because they bring some of them back to the pack in the kind of that middle pack of the Big East.
Right. Well, and you know, just to put the DePaul loss in perspective, I mean, we talked about it in the last podcast, you know, to have an outside shot or a decent shot at it at a tournament bid, Marquette has to go 10-8 in conference. Well, 10-8, I mean, if you win your 9 home games, you only need one road loss. So
one road
theoretically, game. You know, the DePaul loss doesn't hurt. That's just one less road win that we potentially – that was arguably probably our easiest opportunity at a road win. But, you know, and I also don't think we're going to go 9-0 at home either.
No,
so.
That's the thing. You know, we'll – like I said, we want to talk about tourney stuff. We'll maybe get into that later in the season. I want to see this team – put together like 3 or 4 really good outings until I get really excited about this team and maybe postseason play, you know, and go, you know, getting an NIT bid or whatever, something like that. But, you know, I just, you know, again, we get back to the cliches again. Let's just go. I'm just want to take it one game at a time. I want to see how they do against Georgetown, how they're going to do in this road environment against a team that probably has them outgunned. And that's, you know, with their size, I think it's going to be a tough matchup for Fisher, especially if they double team him like other teams have. I think it's going to be tough for Fisher to get involved when you look at their height. So, you know, the guards are going to have to make shots in D.C. if Marquette's going to win this game. But, you know, Marquette has played Georgetown tough since they've, you know, joined the conference, especially over the last few years. So I'm expecting a good effort. I don't know if it's going to be enough to get a win in D.C., but I hopefully they take a lot of the positives out of that Providence game and can take them on the road.
Yeah, this Georgetown game again is where I go ahead and I say we got to respect the process. Let's, you know, it may not be a win. I would not anticipate a win, but hopefully there'll be some positives to take away from the win. Unlike the Georgetown game where there was pretty much nothing positive to take away.
Yeah, yeah. And if they win, we will talk about their Final Four chances next week.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, just a few closing notes. You know, still all quiet on the recruiting front, and I would guess if there was going to be any transfers coming in, we would hear about it pretty soon because I would guess classes aren't that far
classes
away.
Classes start next week.
Okay, so the week of the 12th is when classes start. So if anything's going to happen there, you would anticipate. But everything's been quiet. We mentioned that Akoi Agao kid on the last podcast, the kid from Louisville. From what I've been able to find, he has visited Nebraska, which is where he's from, where he went to high school anyway. And Georgetown is apparently recruiting him as well. Other than that, I really haven't been able to find anything else about him and his possible college destination. So maybe this time a week from now, we will know more if Marquette is going to add any midseason transfers. I did see they added a couple walk-ons, though. You know, not that that's going to have that much of an effect on the games, but it's nice to know there will be two more bodies in practice, and in some kind of disaster scenario where there are injuries or rejections or something, Marquette has a couple more guys they could throw out there if they need
to. We're not forfeiting any games.
Yes, Marquette will now have to be in a 4-on-5 situation if they have too many injuries or whatever in any given game. So
and not that it's it necessarily guarantees something will happen this time, but I do believe that Fisher announced his transfer to Marquette the Wednesday before classes resumed.
Yeah.
So, you know, this coming week, if there's going to be anything, and it's kind of obvious to state, but if they're going to be anything, it's going to be probably
Exactly. Tuesday or Wednesday. All these kids who are midseason transfers, if they want to get enrolled and, you know, start the clock on, you know, their eligibility for next year and, you know, can get in classes and start practicing with the team, you know, they got to pick a school sometime in the next week so they can enroll and you know, get their classes squared away. So
I guess my point was more that, you know, just because we haven't heard anything doesn't mean that we don't have someone coming in, but we have to hear this week, otherwise it's not happening.
That's right. And as I said, there's no pressure to necessarily add anyone because it's not like it's going to have any effect on this season, but I am curious to see if Wojo's going to do any adding to the roster as he kind of looks ahead to next year. As we wrap things up, as always, you can connect with us on the Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is M-O-O-O-F 23. You can find us on Facebook. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page where we post the podcast. And, of course, it's on Cracked Sidewalks as well. You can leave your comments, download it there. And, of course, we are on iTunes. Phil, let's hope 2015 continues with many, many more victories.
Absolutely, and no more DePaul dumpster fires.
At least we don't have to go back there again this year.
That is true. We're done. We're done there for a year. So here's to hoping that the gold Ahoya is better than the blue gray Ahoya.
Yeah, Ahoya is better than a Hoya.
Hoya. Yeah.
Until next time, seashells and balloons, everyone.